In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for hour number two for Friday, December 17th, 2010, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I am very pleased to welcome you to the last Federal News Countdown program of 2010. Next Friday, we are in best of programming because it's Christmas Eve. And the week after that, same thing because it will be New Year's Eve, and we'll be back with a brand new Federal News Countdown for the week of July 3rd. That would be three Fridays from now. And a terrific lineup up to wrap up the Federal News Countdown. David Olive, principal at Catalyst Partners, here for this is your first Federal News Countdown. It's great to see you, David. And John Palguta, vice president of the Partnership for Public Service, a repeat offender on the countdown.
Indeed.
And it's great to see you. And throughout the course of the show today, gentlemen, I hope you'll enjoy this. I'm going to hold it up for the camera. Bauducco Panettone Specialty Cake. That we had in, I think Chris Dorabeck brought this in. It was in the kitchen and I rescued it from the kitchen. So, I had a slice of it earlier. I followed the directions on the box.
Was it hard?
No, it wasn't very hard, but I don't think I've ever seen a cake that had directions on it before. I had some help from Emily Jarvis.
That's because it's a specialty cake.
Well, that's very true.
It's not a regular cake.
It says right on here that it's moist and ready to eat, and I can confirm that both of those are true. So, throughout the course of the hour, I hope you have a chance to dig into that. It is indeed delicious. We're here for a purpose, though. That's the Federal News Countdown, and we start with
number three.
John Palguta, the third most important federal news story of the week, according to you, is the Federal Computer Week story, Snow Day Telework Rules Loosen Up, and the telework component of this is the big deal, is it not?
What is? There's two things about it, Francis. One, of course, we rarely see federal policy get made and put into action so quickly. Snow's a big deal in D.C. And so the Office of Personnel Management issued new employee dismissal and government closure guidelines on Wednesday. We got some snow on Thursday, and the guidelines are in effect. The two things that were new about these guidelines, one, the major one, is that it allows federal employees, when there's bad weather out and the government's not completely closed, to normally take unscheduled leave.
Mm-hmm.
Now, under the new guidelines, they can take unscheduled leave or unscheduled telework. If they have a telework arrangement in place, and even though it's not their normal day to telework, they can actually stay home, not have to take leave, which comes out of their personal leave balance,
mm-hmm.
and telework. So a way for government to actually keep, you know, operating and things to get done, employees to benefit by not having to take time off, and a win-win situation. And I will say, I have to say, the other thing about these new guidelines, which I thought was newsworthy, is that they changed the designation when government actually closes down.
Mm-hmm.
And it's now going to be, it used to be, you know, government's closed.
Right.
Non-essential personnel don't have to come in.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's federal offices will be closed to the public.
Yeah.
And the significance is that recognizes that, you know, even when, you know, things are closed down, there's still people behind those doors mm-hmm. getting things done. And words matter sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the whole non-essential personnel, it's like, well, why do we have them if they're not essential? That was bad terminology. So now, bad weather, you can't get in. It's closed to the public.
Mm-hmm.
But public's business is still being done.
I think this makes a lot of sense. Federal News Radio's Jason Miller was at this OPM event and talked to me about it. We've got the details, including the memo from OPM, posted at federalnewsradio.com. Demonstrating the fact, though, that Federal Computer Week will quote absolutely anybody in a story. Paragraph number four, John Palguta, vice president for policy at the Partnership for Public Service, said the new policy also demonstrates the value of technology in allowing the work of government to proceed even in bad weather. So kudos to you for getting in on that. Seriously, though, the telework element of this, I think, is significant because it kind of is an attempt to fill in what I call the telework sandwich. The upper level management and the rank and file are the bread in the sandwich. They want to telework and they want everybody in their agencies that can to telework. The middle part of the sandwich is that mid-level of managers who
right.
still is apprehensive about doing it, and it seems to me that this is an effort by the administration and OPM to say this is another example of how you middle managers are going to have to get used to the idea of your people at least being able to telework.
Absolutely. It's, you know, it's another way to encourage managers, and the bottom line is it's good for government you know, good for the public in terms of government's work getting done.
Mm-hmm.
So again, as I said, a win-win. Those middle managers are going to continue to be pressed a little bit, those who still don't quite buy into it. But I think we're moving down that road, slowly though it may be.
John Palguda's story number 3 in the countdowns from FCW, Snow Day Telework Rules Loosen Up by Aliyah Khan. And you can find that right now at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, as you can find all of the stories that we're counting down on the Federal News Countdown today. And David Olive, your story number 3 is headlined, D.C. Subway System to Start Random Bag Searches. Did this come as a surprise? Because I wasn't hearing any buzz about this or anything at all. It seemed to me, at least, to appear out of nowhere. You're pretty woven into the Homeland Security community here in town. Is this something that's been talked about for a while?
Francis, they first talked about doing this back in 2008, and it never really got off the ground. The Department of Homeland Security and WMATA had done some tests out at the New Carrollton Metro Station on being able to check passengers that were at that one station, just to test some new technology and some behavioral detection officer training. But it was determined that it was not effective, what they were trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
However, in light of the two most recent incidents here in the Washington metropolitan area, both of which claimed targeting of the Metro system, Metro has said, well, we're going to start this back.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to randomly check. Some stories say as much as every third person that goes into a Metro train station or gets on one of the Metro buses. There are 1.2 million people per day that use a Metro system, according to a Washington Post story. So if you're trying to look at screen stop one-third of those people, it is going to have a significant
mm-hmm.
impact.
Yeah.
And the pushback is already coming from, some of the folks are saying, well, they'll never inspect my bag, or they won't stop me, and it's a violation of my civil liberties, and there's quite a bit of angst around this. But just the impact of making the system work smoothly, I think, merits this being one of the top stories of the week.
This story says this is a program based on similar efforts in Boston and New York. Do we have a sense of how it's working in those two cities to get an idea of what we might have to look forward to here?
The New York program has been going for quite some time. Theirs is the police officers will act if they see something suspicious. The Boston program is one that's coordinated through the Port Authority, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, again, based on an officer seeing something or some of the just simple behavior detection officers. The key in both of those instances is they're trying to shift the weight to look for bad people rather than bad things.
Mm-hmm.
A layered security program would say you're looking for both. Here, almost all of the screening that is done has been built around looking for bad things, and WMATA's effort now will be looking at people who look suspicious or not without profiling them, and they
mm-hmm.
and they will not profile except for where does it profile against a known threat,
because
mm-hmm. There have been very serious incidents. The 7/7 attacks in London attacked the train and the bus system. The Madrid bombings several years ago attacked the train system. So they're very active threats. The question is, what can they do to throw an extra layer of security in, and how will that be received? And I think the public acceptance of screening in any nature, whether it was the whole-body imagers or the other things that TSA is doing, is going to be a debate we'll hear for a long time.
David Olive, story number 3 in the countdown this week is headlined, D.C. Subway System to Start Random Bag Searches. You can find it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Story number 2 from David Olive and John Palguda. When In-Depth with Francis Rose continues, it's the Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Hi, I'm Denise Ballou of the FBI. The case was revealed in December 1995. Operation Senior Sentinel targeted illegal boiler rooms and telemarketing fraud.
The case was hugely significant in that it's one of the few, if not only, instances I can think of where an entire crime problem was basically wiped out by very focused, dramatic investigation.
Keith Slaughter is special agent in charge of FBI San Diego. Formerly in Miami, he initiated the undercover operation that evolved into Senior Sentinel.
These were telemarketers who were really, really bad individuals who were promising big prizes and a lot of different things, preying on customers, especially the elderly.
Many were conned into losing their life savings, but the tables were turned.
Instead of using undercover agents in those cases, we used a combination of retired agents and retired citizens affiliated with the AARP to pose as victims.
Ultimately, about 1,200 arrests and hundreds of convictions. I'm Denise Ballou of the Bureau on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Arink.
This is J.J. Green. For the Marine Corps, the term Semper Fidelis is a way to distinguish itself from any other service. The Latin term means always faithful. It became their motto in 1883 and guides them to remain faithful to the mission at hand, to each other, to the Corps, and to the country, no matter what. The Marine Corps says there's no such thing as an ex-Marine. Once a Marine, always a Marine. If you have stories about the Marines or any other distinguished service member, drop me a line at jgreen@wtop.com.
When you hear the word counterfeit, you automatically think of money. Well, it's much broader than that. Everything you buy has the potential of being counterfeit, especially those items that are hard to find and run the risk of becoming obsolete. And that's where Arink comes in. They're helping customers plan ahead for parts obsolescence so that when a part is needed, no matter how small, it's the real deal. When lives are at stake and relying on the integrity of systems is critical, there's no time to question authenticity. For more information and career opportunities, log on to ARINC.com.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorabeck. Here's what we're working on for the Dorabeck Insider this afternoon. We hear it a lot. Work isn't a place you go, but rather it's something that you do. Well, how does that change work? And how does that change how you manage workers? We'll talk to the author of a new book about some of the challenges ahead. And how many email messages do you get? You ever feel overwhelmed with email? We'll get tips for sorting through all those messages this afternoon, 3 to 7, on the Dorabeck Insider. It's right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. David Olive of Catalyst Partners and John Palguda of the Partnership for Public Service are my guests on the Federal News Countdown this week, and we're up to
number two.
Second most important federal news story of the week from John Palguda's from the Washington Post, a Joe Davidson story headlined, Whistleblower Protection Bill Hits Sudden Stop in Congress. And it seems like we're at the time of year and a situation politically with a new Congress coming in where, with a few exceptions, which we'll talk about later on in the show, almost everything is hitting a stop in Congress. So maybe proponents of the whistleblower bill shouldn't feel picked on or feel like they're some kind of in some kind of a bad situation. Because it happened to just about everything, isn't it?
That's right, Francis. But I think that what makes this one stick out is that it looked like it was, you know, had good bipartisan support, was on a smooth track. One of the reasons that it became the number two story for me is I know a little bit about the history of you know, whistleblowing and protections for whistleblowers. It actually goes back to 78. The Civil Service Reform Act was the first time Congress said, you know, it's in public interest for federal employees to come forward and share information about fraud, waste, mismanagement. And if they do so in the public interest, they should not be persecuted. And so they put into law in 78 a set of whistleblower protections. Turned out, and I was actually in government doing studies on this stuff in the early 80s, turned out they weren't as effective as they thought about in terms of encouraging folks and protecting folks. So in 89, there was actually a major amendment to the Whistleblower Protection Act of 89. Same thing. It made some improvements, but everybody quickly discovered that, well, you know, there's still flaws. So, Francis, for the last 12 years, they've been working on, you know, trying to really, you know, make some major improvements on this. They had widespread support for this. The bill actually passed the Senate last week, the Whistleblower Protection Enhancement Act of 2010. And it did several really valuable things, I think, for whistleblowers. That allowed them to have jury trials if they wanted. It allowed for some expanded payment of attorney fees and compensatory damages if someone was found to have been reprised against. It extended protections to Transportation Security Administration workers that they're not covered right now because mm-hmm. they weren't around when the law was passed. And it also provides some protections for members of the intelligence community. They were excluded as well. So everything looks good. Both looked like both houses were in favor. It goes over to the House. And all of a sudden, at the last minute, a couple members of Congress said, hey, wait a minute. You know, I'm reading all this WikiLeaks stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Is this going to just, be more people leaking information out there? I'm not so sure. Put a stop on it.
Yeah.
Now, the fact of the matter is there are, severe penalties for somebody who leaks classified information detrimental to national security. So I don't think it's, really a problem. In fact, if people can go through official channels to provide information, that even prevents stuff going to WikiLeaks.
Well, that was my theory about this when I read this story, is it seems to me logical that if I'm Bradley Manning, unless I'm absolutely bound and determined to put the screws to the federal government for whatever reason, if I'm really doing it for constructive purposes, if I have the opportunity to know that I'm going to be protected and give the information to somebody in government who maybe hasn't seen it and can do something about it, that's much more constructive for the country. It's much better for the taxpayer. So it seems to me that these protections make a lot of sense. I mean, it kind of seems like a no-brainer. Daryl Issa, the incoming chairman of the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee, is saying in this story, I guess the good news is that he wants this bill to come back. And that's kind of him putting his imprimatur on it means that there's a pretty decent chance that we'll see this again January, February, don't you think?
I would hope so. It's just, again, a little frustrating. And I know, David, you've spent some time up on the Hill earlier in your career. And I don't know how many members of Congress get this kind of information, but I've never met a member of Congress that embraces fraud, waste, and mismanagement.
Right.
They're always looking for a way to, push back somehow.
Mm-hmm.
John, you're exactly right. And you'd love to meet one who did embrace embrace that just for the sheer fun of seeing them defend it.
He'd be fun at parties for sure.
Exactly. There is a larger issue in this, though, that I think the new Congress and the new leadership have to address. And that is the question of the overlapping jurisdictions on so many of these issues given the current committee structure. It is more of a problem in the House, clearly, because there's more members. But Pete Hoekstra's opposition was that his committee didn't have time to look at it, as opposed to the committee of jurisdiction
mm-hmm.
that got the bill through, thoroughly vetted, and out.
You mean maybe the committees didn't trust each other?
No, I think that it's everyone wanting to either put their stamp on it or to say that when something goes awry, that they could have prevented it.
Mm-hmm.
I deal a lot with Homeland Security. There are anywhere between 88 and 108 committees and subcommittees that have jurisdictional oversight of the Department of Homeland Security. That is absurd. And if you want to know how I feel strongly about it,
what do you really think?
But this is an example of a bill that got all the way up through the congressional process, and one committee chairman felt like his jurisdictional turf was not adequately protected, and so he stopped what had been a consensus bipartisan bill.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying that when you raise the issue up another layer, the overlapping jurisdictions committee is keeping things from getting accomplished. Is that a good thing? If it's bad legislation, of course it's good. If it's good legislation, of course it's not.
Mm-hmm.
That's in the eye of the beholder, of course.
Yeah. The issue with that, though, David, I think you're right, and I've done a number of shows about the issue of oversight at DHS. I haven't ever talked to a single person that thinks that there's any chance that anything's going to be done about it for the foreseeable future.
I think it's going to require one of two things. It's going to require the speaker and the leadership overriding the individual congressional chairman and saying, no, this is how we're going to do it, much the same way they do armed services issues today. Or it's going to continue to be this mishmash of oversight where it will be very, very difficult to get things done, and you'll have something like this whistleblower bill that gets right up to the edge and then gets sidetracked.
John Palguta's story number two on the Federal News Countdown this week is headlined, Whistleblower Protection Bill Hits Sudden Stop in Congress. And you can read it and all of the stories that we're counting down this week at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. David Olive's story number two, when the In-Depth with Francis Rose continues. It's the Federal News Countdown.
NBC News Radio, I'm Luke Russert. Done deal. President Obama is poised to sign a bipartisan tax compromise, extending the Bush-era tax cuts while renewing long-term jobless benefits. Here's NBC's Kelly O'Donnell.
There was a talk marathon with some House Democrats saying they'd received phone calls from the president urging them to get it done, and just before midnight they did.
Julian Assange says his organization WikiLeaks can withstand what he calls decapitation attacks. He spoke from a supporter's estate in eastern England, where he's staying while he's out on bail.
There has been many calls by senior political figures in the United States, including elected ones in the Senate, for my execution.
Icy cold weather continues to plague much of the nation. Meteorologists are keeping an eye on a nor'easter developing off the mid-Atlantic coast, which could bring heavy snow Sunday. And frequent flyers, are you naughty or nice? A Travelocity survey says 93% help fellow passengers stow heavy bags. I'm Luke Russert, NBC News Radio.
The 6 geese a laying are $249. With tax, your total is $261.58.
But I'm using my store charge. Shouldn't it be less?
I'm sorry, but your store charge doesn't entitle you to any additional savings on geese.
Even geese a laying?
Any kind of geese, ma'am.
For holiday shopping without the hassles, come to Kohl's instead, where you can save up to an extra 30% on everything you really want with no exclusions when you open or use your Kohl's charge this Thursday through Saturday at Kohl's Christmas 3-Day Sale. The more you know, the more you Kohl's. Kohl's. Expect great things.
The countdown is on. Get to JCPenney this Friday and Saturday to save on all your holiday gifts. Wrap up the biggest savings with doorbusters. Get 60% off sleepwear and robes for her and the kids. And a cozy 50 to 70% off men's and women's sweaters. Save 60% on all blankets and 50% off all diamond jewelry. Plus, spend more, earn more with JCP Cash. That's $10, $15, or $20 off. Unlike other stores, we don't make you come back to save. Go to jcp.com to see everything on sale. JCPenney. Sephora inside JCPenney, not participating. Offers end December 18th.
What will happen to your hard-earned wealth after you die? How do you protect your assets for your family? Will your heirs squander it away? Will creditors and predators try to take it away from your loved ones? At Zelle Law, our goal is to give you peace of mind in planning for your retirement and beyond by helping you construct the best life and estate plans customized to your needs. Find out what you need to know on Blueprint for Wealth. Join me, Wayne Zell, Saturdays at 10 a.m. right here on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio.
Profile America, Friday, December 17th. Many U.S. families will go out this weekend to buy and put up their Christmas tree. While the use of evergreen trees to celebrate the winter season occurred even before the birth of Jesus, the first printed reference to a decorated tree was in Germany in 1531. Across the country, just over a fifth of households still put up and decorate a real tree, and almost half now use an artificial tree. The remaining one-third of households do not include a tree in their holiday observances. Christmas trees are grown in all 50 states, and each year's crop is worth more than $400 million. Oregon is the leading producer, while China leads in the production of artificial trees. You can find these and more facts about America from the U.S. Census Bureau online at census.gov.
"40 kilometers northwest of Kandahar, Afghanistan, at a remote desert military base, American soldiers are playing video games. There are cold drinks, snacks, comfy chairs, and an internet connection. It's the USO To Go program, and it's just one of the ways the USO supports our troops, lifts their spirits, and serves as a link with the American people. Find out how you can help. Visit us at USO.org. The USO, until everyone comes home.
We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown this week with David Olive of Catalyst Partners and John Palguta of the Partnership for Public Service. And David Olive, your story number two is from the Christian Science Monitor. House passes bipartisan tax cut deal, first of Obama administration. And the implications for the everyday citizen, the person walking down the street, are pretty obvious. What does this mean to people inside the government? Why should they care about what happens with this deal?
Following the midterm election, to come out of the box with what the headline you just read says, which is the first bipartisan deal of this president's administration, I think should send a very strong signal.
Mm-hmm.
And it sends a signal that the White House is going to take a different approach than it has in the past 2 years, when the same party controlled both houses of Congress, and they still couldn't get a lot of the key legislation out the door. What we just talked about on the Whistleblower Act.
Mm-hmm.
To me, this is a major story in terms of the political process and how this White House will interact with its own constituency and its own political base, because there was a tremendous amount of pushback from Democrats, particularly the lame ducks, who said, why in the world should we vote for this?
Mm-hmm.
And the White House persuaded them to do it. Why should the Republicans vote for it when very shortly they're going to have control of the House and a much closer margin in the Senate? And the Republican leadership caused the people to vote and vote in a significant number on the Senate side. So I think inside the Beltway, it's a process and a politics and approach story. Outside the Beltway, it's the impact of the legislation that affects everyone. And for the very first time, people can say, you know what, they came together and they got it done. And we may not agree with individual parts of it, but in 28 minutes, the president at the White House is going to sign a bipartisan tax bill.
Mm-hmm.
That, I think, is huge.
Well, David, let me ask you. I agree, you know, this getting a bipartisan bill out there on this very contentious issue is quite an accomplishment. But I note that clearly the constituency out there, the folks that sent all those elected members to Congress, nobody really got hurt. You know, everybody got their tax cut, and there's not a lot of pain. So if I'm a member of Congress, I can complain that I didn't want this in there because I don't think we can afford it, what have you. But I'm not going to get a whole lot of grief from mm-hmm. my constituents. Can this bipartisanship dance by Obama be successful when they're looking at stuff that's going to be hurting some people?
Well, the real key to your question will come, in my view, when the president submits his FY12 budget in the beginning of February, because at that point the White House will put before the Congress the pain that the spending or the tax cuts or the revenue foregone in this bill will create. Where do we cut the budget to lessen the amount of the deficits? What are the programs that we do to match the tax cuts that we've just done? So while it postpones the pain, it doesn't postpone it very long, and those issues are going to be the ones that have now been kicked to the new Congress. And how they compromise or come to an agreement on where those cuts will be, that will, in programs and spending that will implement these tax cuts, I think is when you're going to see a significant amount of political pain, a lot of constituents who are upset. I was in Washington State the last 2 days. In fact, I took the red eye back so I could be here this afternoon. Yesterday, Governor Christine Gregoire was on talk radio in the afternoon crying. I mean, I don't want to equate her to John Boehner, but she was very emotional about the cuts that she had to make in order to meet the requirements of their state to balance the budget.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things she had to cut was payment by the state for kidney dialysis for human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And she literally cried on the air because says this is a very painful decision to me. Whether our state legislature goes along with it or not, I think will remain to be seen. But the pain that was so evident in just listening to her on the radio yesterday is symbolic of the type of thing I think we'll see, maybe without so much Kleenex being needed, but it'll be a painful.
David Olive, your story number two on the Federal News Countdown this week. House passes bipartisan tax cut deal. First of Obama administration. You find it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, along with all the stories we're counting down on the countdown. And that means we're up to story number one from David Olive and John Palguda. And we'll talk about story number one of the week when In-Depth with Francis Rose continues in a moment.
You hear the sounds of hammers and saws, but it's also the sound of freedom and independence. Across America, people are supporting Homes for Our Troops build specially adapted homes for our severely injured veterans. Now, it's your turn to help Sergeant Stephen Kiernan, who lost both legs while serving in Iraq. He volunteered to protect our freedom. You can volunteer your time, donate materials, or make a cash donation to this effort. Visit homesforourtroops.org or call 866-7-TROOPS.
This is NIH Health Matters. I'm Joe Belinfi. New research findings underscore the need to monitor and obtain treatment for victims of cyberbullying. Dr. Ronald Iannotti at the Eunice Kennedy Shriver National Institute of Child Health and Human Development explains, cyberbullying involves aggressive behaviors communicated over a computer or cell phone.
But what's unique about cyberbullying is that cyber victims report greater symptoms of depression than cyberbullies or cyberbully victims.
Dr. Iannotti says because of the association between bullying and depression, bullies, victims, and those that both bully and are victims themselves are candidates for evaluations by a mental health professional. For more information, visit www.nichd.nih.gov. Health Matters is produced by the National Institutes of Health, part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris.
Virginia Congressman Jim Moran.
Both Tom Davis and I voted against BRAC, and this was one of the reasons. We knew that it didn't make a whole lot of sense to move people out of commercial office space with access to public transit, move them onto military bases that were already located in congested areas that had no access to public transit. But even though it's the 11th hour, adjustments need to be made.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.
We're back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown this week with John Palguda of the Partnership for Public Service and David Olive of Catalyst Partners. And all of the stories that we count down every week are available at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. We're up to
number one.
And the most important federal news story of the week, according to both of my guests, is the disappearance of the omnibus bill. David Olive, your story is headlined from federalnewsradio.com. Senate Dem leader drops nearly $1.3 trillion spending bill. John, your take is from the Federal Times, the headline, government appears headed for shutdown, Senate sources say. This has been a bone of debate ever since it looked like Republicans would take over the House of Representatives. Shutdown was the first thing that we heard because that's essentially what happened the last time Republicans took over a branch of Congress in 1995. That's what we had. Do you think they didn't learn a lesson last time, though, John? It seems to me that incoming Speaker Boehner and the leadership that he's bringing in with him all seem to be saying, hey, we learned our lesson the last time, and yet these stories about potential shutdowns continue to persist.
Yeah, and I think the important thing about the shutdown story is that it's probably been averted, because when that little piece hit the wire, there was positioning around, there's just too much in the omnibus from both sides, different things, of course, that they didn't like. And if they don't pass anything, government runs out of money at midnight Saturday tomorrow. That's when you have a shutdown. You know, the government's not authorized to spend money except for very essential things. So what happened, in part was, you know, that specter of a shutdown, which I don't think anybody really wanted given what happened in 95, and I was in government then, it was a mess.
Didn't do anybody any favors.
It didn't. And the Republicans thought, of course, it was going to be great leverage for them, and they lost. I think what happened here is that, Senate, Majority Leader Harry Reid said, you know, okay, we can't do this. Drop the bill. What that means, this has to be the number one story for the week because, okay, government's still going to run out of money at midnight tomorrow. They got to put something in place sometime soon. Mm-hmm. What's it going to be? So that's kind of, you know, that kind of tees up the continuing story here. They're talking about continuing resolution. And for those folks in the federal government, and having been a manager in government for many years, it was so frustrating never quite knowing for so much of the year how much you had to spend. You know, talk about doing strategic planning. I mean, I was just trying to figure out, you know, what do I get to do next week, let alone, next year.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a major story for the federal government and federal employees.
The majority leader in the Senate, Harry Reid, is saying we only have one choice. That's a short-term CR. So in the next 24 hours or so, Senator McConnell and I will try to come up with a CR to fund the government for a certain period of time. I think that comment's interesting because he seems to have forgotten that he's got another chamber that he's got to consult. And, majority leader Hoyer on the House side has been working. They've had a short-term CR that will get him to the beginning of January for a couple of days now that's been in process. So this, it's not as though this idea has just been born. I got a kick out of that. David, what's the significance of if any, of the actual omnibus bill itself being taken off the table, not relative necessarily to the spending issue, but just to the fact that so many members of Congress objected to it on both sides of the aisle?
Well, it's a very matrixed answer. First, you had the stories that Senator McConnell and others had put earmarks in the omnibus bill. And as John and I were talking outside before the show began, the instantaneous communication that came back, what do you mean? You've just stood up on the floor of the Senate and said you were against earmarks, and now you're trying to slip them through at the last minute in this huge, massive omnibus bill nobody has seen before. It's the old ways. And the politics and the immediate response targeted at Senator McConnell and others who had earmarks in the bill, I think it is one of the major factors that knocked it off its track.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because basically they reversed position.
Yes. The second thing is, unlike the tax bill, where the White House was very engaged, the stories are that the White House gave Senator Inouye, the chairman of the Appropriations Committee, almost no response or support because they were so singularly focused on getting the tax bill done that they let him basically try to put it together, and the White House didn't weigh in with its political weight and say that this was important. So the fact that they engaged in one major bill, got it through in bipartisan way, that they didn't engage in this one, I think is part of the story.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly the certainty of spending is driving people crazy at OMB, at least the ones that we talked to.
Yeah.
Because if they had an omnibus, at least they knew what the FY11 spending would be, so then they can tailor the FY12 budget, which has got to go to the printer any time in the next, week or so, in order to get done and published in time for the president to deliver it. And he will certainly want to preview this in his State of the Union. Drafts of that speech are already being vetted at the various cabinet levels. So it was the beginning step of a series of dominoes that had to fall, and now that first step was missed.
Mm-hmm.
And so what do you do? Do you have a short-term CR? Do you have, one of the things they've talked about is a long-term CR. Instead of an omnibus that changes the bill, we'll just do a CR all the way up to the end of September.
Mm-hmm.
So those are part of the dynamics that I think make this a major uncertainty, the inability to get it through, created by some of the backtracking created when the Tea Partiers got a hold of Senator McConnell and the earmarks, I think just show how complex it is to get a budget through.
Mm-hmm. We talk all the time on the station about how we don't do politics for a living, and yet because of the money implications, you have to pay attention to that stuff. The earmark thing, I think, is fascinating. National Journal reporting today that Senator McConnell had 42 earmarks worth $86.1 million, according to Taxpayers for Common Sense. Senator John Thune, 28 earmarks, $38.5 million. Senator John Cornyn, 51 earmarks for $93.5 million. And that was before they were placed in the bill before the ban. And Senator Claire McCaskill of Missouri pointing out, none of them ever said, okay, we are going to ban earmarks, so take mine out. And that was a point that she's saying, you can't say it's all our fault, meaning the Democratic Party,
right.
That we're doing it all.
Francis, I have said before that Washington does not have a monopoly on hypocrisy,
mm-hmm.
but we do seem to be a magnet for a lot of that. So,
The number one story of the week is chosen by David Olive and John Palguda is the withdrawal of this $1.3 trillion omnibus spending bill, and we'll talk more about the implications of it and the potential implications of a continuing resolution, as David mentioned, either until sometime in January, sometime in February, or for the rest of FY 2011 when we continue on the Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
News for the uninsured and the insured. U.S. Healthy People 2020 Network is now offering annual health physical to the public. Members receive comprehensive health assessments for hypertension, thyroid, kidney, osteoporosis, diabetes, cholesterol, heart screening, and more till the year 2020. Find out your risks for heart attack or stroke. Take the extra step you and your family need to stay healthy till 2020 and beyond. Call 301-386-2223 or visit ushealthypeople2020.org for details. Sponsored by Prevent First, a nonprofit health organization.
I'm Beyonce with an important message about hunger in America. Did you know 1 in 8 people struggle with hunger? Over 12 million children live in homes where there isn't always enough food. Food banks are experiencing more demand than ever. Show Your Helping Hand is a nationwide campaign with the goal of helping Feeding America deliver millions of meals to local food banks. Please join me in showing a helping hand to fight hunger. More information is available at showyourhelpinghand.com.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit. Presented by NITP has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
How can I keep my child healthy during flu season? My teenager's always online. How can I be sure he's not into something harmful? Parents Perspective has the answers. Sundays at 4 p.m. on WFED 1500 AM. Designate Parents Perspective 44415 with a generous donation in the combined federal campaign or online at www.parentsperspective.org. Thank you for helping Parents Perspective work for you.
Federal news and information just got more fun and interesting. Amy Morris joins Tom Temin on The Federal Drive, weekday mornings from 6 to 10. Tom and Amy tailor their show for Feds on the Go with usable information from trustworthy and seasoned journalists. You're going to learn, but they also might make you laugh. The Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Amy Morris, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown this week with David Olive of Catalyst Partners and John Palguda of the Partnership for Public Service. And the number one story of the week is the withdrawal in the United States Senate of the omnibus spending bill worth $1.3 trillion. And Senator Harry Reid pulling it late last night and just saying no way to get support for it. And the Senate in the process of working, although Senator Reid didn't directly allude to it, shall we say, working with the House of Representatives to get a continuing resolution. There are three possibilities that we're hearing about. I mentioned before the break, Congressman Hoyer, Leader Hoyer's office is working on a short-term CR that would get him to the beginning of January. David, you mentioned the possibility of one that would take us to the beginning of February, and then the other one that's kind of been bubbling under throughout this whole discussion process, even back before the election, was we might see a CR the whole way through the rest of fiscal 2011. If you're looking at those choices at inside an agency, trying to do planning, you talked about, touched on this a little bit, you must just be going crazy, pounding your head against the wall, trying to think about how to manage anything with these three possibilities floating around out there.
Yeah, absolutely, Francis. And, you know, and if you're sitting there in the agency too, and those are the three choices, you're actually not even sure which one is going to be the best choice, because if you got a year-long continuing resolution, you would think, well, oh, great, so I'm, at least I know what I'm, where I am for the next year. But if they do it that fast, it's probably going to be for most agencies at you know last year's level. So it means I have to eat all the inflationary cost in terms of you know rent and equipment and stuff, travel. And if I've gotten new programs from Congress, you know, I've got to factor how do I get those done, as and some agencies have gotten, or things are happening in the world where you have to respond as an agency. Mm-hmm. So in one sense, I want Congress to be as thoughtful as possible in constructing this, you know, long-term, you know, spend long-term, you know, 9 months of the fiscal year left. But I want them to be thoughtful. But on the other hand, they got to do something fast. So I guess I'd have to, you know, if I had to choose among those, you know, let them put something really quick into place to get us through the, you know, the rest of the year. But, boy, can they, you know, maybe think a little more thoughtfully about how we go forward for the rest of the fiscal year and get the work of government done.
As an experienced Capitol Hill hand, what do you think the likelihood of that happening, David?
Well, first, let's look at what the new Congress will do and what they traditionally do. They'll come in, they'll be sworn in on January 3rd, I think it is. It will take them approximately a month to get organized, to start holding hearings. And then the President's State of the Union comes the end of January. The President's budget generally comes the first to, within the first 10 days of February. And then there will, then the traditional hearing calendar starts up on oversight, starting with the budget and then into the appropriation cycle. So I think it is entirely likely you will see a CR at least through the mid part of February so as to try to force congressional action early on rather than pushing it out to the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
There is one thing that is really driving this that makes it difficult for both Republicans and Democrats, and that's Secretary Gates saying that a CR creates significant issues for the Defense Department in things they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I honestly believe that that issue will build up with the new Congress with a lot more credibility for them to act quickly than it does for them to just continue to kick the can to the end of the fiscal year. Because none of them, as their first vote, want to take a vote that will look as if they are challenging the Pentagon on something that will be cast as a matter of national security.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's look ahead to FY 2012. This CR issue has been a problem now for, it seems like, decades, but it's been particularly within the last, what, 8 to 10 years that CRs have been a lot more commonly done and for longer terms.
Yeah.
Ostensibly, one of the reasons that Congress changed hands in this election is because people are dissatisfied with the ineffectiveness of it. One of the major jobs is to get spending bills done and plans for how the taxpayers' dollars will be spent. Is there some potential, do you think, for us this year, 2011, talking about, to finally get out of the CR business and by the end of September to have spending bills done? Or is this turning into the way that Washington does business from now on? John, what do you think about that?
I would love to think that we're working our way to a situation where we actually get appropriation bills near the beginning of the fiscal year. And I'm an optimist about most things, but I have a hard time finding optimism, that this is going to happen. And it worries me. And one of the biggest things that I worry about too is that when they are rushing to put something together and they're looking, they're going to have to be looking, this year, certainly 2012, for spending cuts. We got a very expensive tax bill passed. That was the number two story. And what I fear is that there's going to be the lazy approach of, well, we'll just do across the board 10%, you know, cut, a hiring freeze, what have you. That is very bad management. And we need better than that for government. We need to have a conversation around, if we can't afford it all, what programs do we stop? What do we, cut back? What do we discontinue? Not, you know, well, let's just, you know, trim everywhere,
right?
Because it really doesn't make any sense to do it that way. But but I don't think we're going to get past this need for continuing resolutions anytime soon.
How do you feel about that, David?
Well, Francis, I would agree with that. There are two significant differences this time than there have been before. Number one is that the incoming speaker has said he's going to separate out each agency and do their appropriations bill as a standalone bill instead of lumping them together in groups.
Mm-hmm.
So the traditional thing that held up a lot of the appropriations work for the groups that were lumped in with HHS had nothing, were specific to HHS and not the others. Speaker Boehner is going to do something there. Mm-hmm. But the most important thing to me is the way they put people on the Appropriations Committee, the new freshman members of Congress. Conventional wisdom said you put your most vulnerable members, whether you're Republican or Democrat, on the A committees. You give them a chance to show how much pork they can bring back home, and you allow them to get through the next election. This time, they totally went the opposite way, only put members from very safe seats on the Appropriations Committee, meaning that they felt like they could politically take the hit back home for cutting the budget. We may just get out of the CR business this
year.
Well,
it will certainly be something to keep track of, and it will certainly be something that you can read more about at federalnewsradio.com. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for the Federal News Countdown this week. A terrific one with John Palguta of the Partnership for Public Service, David Olive of Catalyst Partners. You can read all the stories at federalnewsradio.com. I'm glad you guys enjoyed the specialty cake. It's really good, isn't it?
That's outstanding.
All right. I think this is Dorabeck doing this. We'll find out on the Dorabeck Insider, which is next between 3 and 7 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. A brand new in-depth with Francis Rose on Monday at 1 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.